Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this is going to be a show you're all dying to hear. As a matter of fact, it's about dying. So we're going to review that, talk about our process that we go through and what dying is like. I just recently had a death in the family, so I'm very acquainted with the dead. And as I've talked about on the show before, I often have conversations with the dead. Pretty strange, huh? Well, I'm a strange guy. And because of that, I'm able to have strange people on my show. So I have an author of many books, wonderful books, who knows a lot about dying. And let's see how alive she is Roberta Grimes. Hi, Roberta.
What a great introduction. some of my best friends are dead, which is actually a happy thing because I get to be in very close touch with them as a result.
Right. And this is something most people don't understand. They think we're strange, and it's difficult to connect in their minds to something that they've been programmed very poorly about.
Yes.
And so you've written a number of books on it, and you've had a lot of communication with the dead. And you're not a flaky person. You're a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer. Yes. So by day, I'm a mild-mannered business lawyer. By night, I turn into a super researcher. I've been researching death and the afterlife all my life because of some experiences I had in childhood that I was trying to figure out. And what I've learned is that the news about death is far more wonderful than our most optimistic imaginings.
Right.
It's all good news. And so I'm just trying to help people come to understand that, come to understand what's true.
And I'm so glad to be talking with you about it. I also had my father died when I was a teenager, and since then I've been on this path myself. And so you and I have been striving to learn more about what's out there and where we go.
Yes.
and the dying process too. And as I mentioned, I just had a death in the family. My brother's wife died just 2 or 3 weeks ago. And what was interesting is that she had no interest or comprehension of anything beyond life.
Wow.
And so she had a very dour approach to dying. And what happened when she died, even after her body was removed from the bed, because she died in her sleep at home with my brother next to her. He woke up in the morning and discovered that she was gone.
Oh, my goodness.
So they took her body. Well, she was very close to death even when they went to sleep that night. And so they took her body. And what I saw was that she, from New York, my brother was in Maryland, but I could see that she was staying in the bed after her body left, feeling like she still needed to die, like she was still dying. And so she was lying in bed as if she was still dying. And she got over that eventually. At the funeral, the gravesite, I was sitting in a seat by the gravesite, and there were seats for immediate family. And it turned out she came and sat next to me. And for the whole ceremony, she was giving me her opinions about it.
Really? Well, you're psychic then.
I'm a practicing intuitive.
Well, I'm totally not psychic. I think that my voyage requires that I be, you know, merely just the facts, looking to the evidence as opposed to any of my own experiences. So, what I love is, as you say, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I'm a skeptic about a lot of things still. I won't believe even new information that's consistent with what I already know unless I've independently verified it, because we've discovered the edge of a gigantic truth that mainstream science absolutely still ignores. For 100 years, we were supposed to know this stuff. It was supposed to come to us 100 years ago. And the fact that science has stonewalled it means we've got to find it out for ourselves. But we don't want to go, at least I don't, want to go off and believe things that might or may not be true. I want to be able to prove to myself they are. And only when I had it all proved did I, to my own pretty much reasonable satisfaction, as if a court of law would accept that information, only then did I write The Fun of Dying.
Right, and that's the name of your book, The Fun of Dying. And
yes.
And you've been chastised about that a lot.
Yes.
And
yeah.
People don't understand that it's really about the afterlife. Even dying is fun, though.
Even right. Dying is fun.
Right. Even the last few days, often for people,
their
mind's clear, they have less pain, and they start actually having visits from those who have died. So that part of it can be great fun. And I've heard many times that, and you talk about that also, is that the dying aren't as attached to need the comforting of the living once they've connected to those who've already died.
Wow, and that's all right. That's true. In fact, in most cases, they seem to not want to talk to us anymore, those of us who are around the bed. So we need to respect that. They'll lie gazing at a corner of the room. Usually the upper corners is where their loved ones first appear, and sometimes they stay there until then wait for them to go up there once they leave the body. Sometimes they come down, though, the dead loved ones who walk around in the room. But when they lie and sort of seem to be looking at a spot, they're talking in their mind with a deathbed visitor. When they say, hey, Mom is here, or Uncle Harry is here, they really are there. Respect that. Dying is a very personal thing, and people who are dying and have loved ones around them, living loved ones, need to be told, you're not crazy. Yes, you know, those people are here for you, and they'll take you where you're going to go. Mm-hmm. You're safe. Go when you're ready. It's okay with me for you to go, because sometimes, especially children and young people, won't go until we give them permission.
I had a client just also in the last couple of weeks whose mother was dying, and she had to take off from work, and she didn't know when her mother would die, and her mother could have lingered for months, and that would have ruined her at work. So she said, she called me and she said, what am I going to do? My mother, she can go on forever. And it's not helping her. It's not helping me. What can we do? I said, I was intuitively given the answer that she has to call her grandfather, her mother's father, to come get her. And so she hung up the phone, lit some incense, and called on her grandfather to come and get her mother, and within 2 hours, her mother passed.
Oh, of course. What a great story. No, that's true. People, sometimes it's as simple as saying, you know, it's okay, I understand that you're at peace about going, and you can leave. They'd like to leave, usually, when we're not there or when no one's paying attention, which can be a problem for some people because they figure they've got to be there when so-and-so dies. Usually they don't want to die until you leave. So say it's okay. You know, I'm going home for the night. If you decide to die in the night, it's okay. We said that to my mother-in-law, and she died that night. It's important we realize that this is their process. They're in charge. They're going someplace wonderful, and we just need to respect them, and by calling Grandpa, you basically brought in somebody who really was able to help,
right.
as opposed to just wringing our hands.
And then there are times when it's harder. For instance, sudden deaths. I have a cousin whose wife and teenage daughter were killed in a car crash.
Oh, Lord!
And we were at the house mourning for many days. And the two who had died in the crash were there. And they were also in grief because it had upset them so much. They had each other, but they couldn't connect to any of us.
Yeah.
And so I actually ended up sitting down with them and talking with them and telling them, it's okay, don't worry. We know you have to go. You're in grief and you don't have to go anywhere yet. But when you're ready, let me tell you, there's a great place to go. And you might want to hang around a little while because you're not ready to give up this life. And yet you're really gone also at the same time. And then it turned out that a couple months later, a neighbor of my cousin called me and said, well, how are they doing now? And I said, I don't know, I haven't checked in. So I checked in and I found out they were still around. The mother was ready to leave and the daughter wanted to wait another week. So the mother was willing to wait another week with the daughter. And he said, do you know why that's true? I said, no, I have no idea. He said, well, a week from today, her high school is having a big memorial for her.
Oh.
So she wanted to wait for that.
Yeah.
And then people take off. Even my sister-in-law stayed at the gravesite after we all went to her son's house for after the ceremony for food and gather there. And she never showed up at her son's house. And I said, what's going on? She's not here. And then I was told that at the gravesite, her mother, who had died the year before, actually, her mother showed up to take her. And she went off with her mother.
Yeah, one of the things that seems to be the case is that the deathbed visitors are important. If we don't go with them, we really aren't sure where to go. We're outside of time. We're outside of all the things we think of as real, and yet we can think we're still here, still alive. Still, we can be trying to get in touch with the living, and we can't because they can't see us. So it can be a real problem for some people who let themselves get distracted by the living. It's very important for people to go with the deathbed visitors when they come.
And there are people who, even on this plane, who can go out and help them.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely right. There's a whole area of good works involved in doing rescue work. Now, I told you I'm totally not psychic. I just was at a wonderful conference in July on new developments in afterlife communication, and Bruce Bowen, who was one of the original explorers with Bob Monroe at the Monroe Institute, which I highly recommend to anybody interested in this stuff, Bruce Bowen did a workshop in which we did rescue work, and I told him ahead of time, I said, there's no way I can do rescue work. Well, you know, the way he did it, he put us into a state. And I ended up rescuing a woman who died in 1780 and had been sitting at a spinning wheel ever since.
Wow,
isn't that
that's
amazing?
Great. It is. There are ghosts. There are consciousnesses, let's call them, that don't move on. And they kind of get stuck because they haven't been helped on. And eventually someone comes along like you or someone
yeah.
else and helps them and says, let's get out of here.
Yes. And all I really had to do was get her attention. When people are like me doing rest, they find people who are naive living people who just are doing this almost on a lark are somehow more noticed by these dead people. I don't begin to understand any of it. But once I got her attention, then the person with me, who in this case I couldn't see, and we were told if you can't see the person with you, just imagine. So I imagine an eight-year-old boy dressed in the 1920s garb of an eight-year-old boy. Well, this eight-year-old boy got her attention then after I did. He was actually apparently an advanced being, and I think he must have thought I was really funny, but that seemed non-threatening to me that he would be that. And he took her off, and I got to witness. I followed. I was told to follow, and I got to witness her reunion with her children, who all looked like early 1800s. Of course, they're all long since dead, but they've been waiting for Mom all this time, and I got to do that.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that thrilling?
Yes, and so don't tell me you're not psychic.
I'm not psychic. He said anybody can do this if you just follow his plan.
Well, then we're all psychic.
It's true. We're all psychic. Right. Some of us, like me, block it. Some, like you, are open to it, and you know, bless you for that, because obviously you're helping a lot of people that way.
Yes, it's so much fun to connect in ways and give people the information that they're seeking. I'm not a medium, though. There are people who specialize in talking
yes.
to the dead.
And, oh, yes.
And I don't do that because the people who specialize in it, somehow they have access to such minutia of detail. And it's amazing what they can see and know and hear that
yes.
is beyond
oh,
me.
Yes.
Yeah. So I give credit to them, and I say to people, if you know, I'm happy to connect, I'll give you information, but if you want even more, there are people who are specialists in that. We're all specialists in psychically in different ways. There are people who can see better. People can hear better. I'm much better at hearing than seeing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think you feel this way as well. I think it is an innate ability. But I also think that if we all gave into it, we're all in different voyages. We signed up for different tasks before we ever were born, and the trick is just to find your task and do it well. And it's clear to me I was not supposed to be psychic. I seem to have an actual aversion to it, but that's okay because it clears me to just the facts, ma'am. I'm just reading the facts, putting them together. And what's glorious now in this new century is that at last we have Quantum Physics for Dummies books, which as soon as people who do this research started to read the Quantum Physics for Dummies books, we got it immediately because quantum physics is a version of the physics that exists in the greater reality, which made no sense to us before, but now it does. It all fits together like a puzzle.
Everything is science. It's not that spirituality is not science.
Yes, you're so right. It is all science. And I think it's tragic that people like business lawyers have to be doing big science in the 21st century. It's crazy. I just did a blog post. My website is robertagrimes.com, and I do a blog there. And I just did a blog post, which I'm already getting comments on, about the fact that 95% of the universe, a little more than that, is called dark matter and dark energy because it doesn't react to photons. 95%! They're only studying 5% of the universe. And there was just it was just revealed that 80% of the light in the universe seems to have no source. It's non-photon light. And they're puzzled by all this. Basically, they're clueless. But the only reason they're clueless is they have not studied the afterlife evidence. I was able to explain what the light is and explain what the matter and energy are, and it all makes perfect sense. And why should I be the one doing that? It should be real scientists doing that.
Well, there was an agreement made a long time ago between the church and scientists at the time of Galileo that scientists who were coming up with anything spiritual were going to be killed by the church. And so they agreed to avoid anything esoteric. And they made it, you know, they had a contract with the church. And for some reason, that is still echoing through this time where science
is enforced. Yes.
Right. And it's amazing that scientists just, they won't even look at it.
We were supposed to get these truths 100 years ago. There was a great push by dead researchers and experts in the early part of the 20th century to bring these truths to the world. Scientists stonewalled them and stiffed them. For the whole of the 20th century, a completely lost century in so many ways, everyone listening should have known this from birth, should have known that our minds are eternal, it's impossible to die, should have known all this stuff. But because science was still cooperating with the church, I guess, I have no idea. It's mainly, this is our turf, you know, we don't want anything that's going to conflict with what we think we know. And as a result, science has been basically in the weeds for 100 years. There's so much they don't know. I mean, the fact that they don't understand or have a clue about what is kind of shocking. And now they don't know where 80% of the light comes from. Another shocking thing.
It's amazing. And also, they don't even want to believe in consciousness.
No, because they don't want to go anywhere near anything that might smack of God. And the reality is, of course, we can even explain what the Big Bang was. I love reading popular science magazines. Scientific American is my favorite, and I get their emails. And almost every week, I can blog about what they say because basically they're trying to figure things out. And I already know the answer. And I shouldn't know the answer. They should know more than I about these things. But frankly, you and I know more because they're not looking at what 95% of the truth is.
Right.
How can you study 5% of the truth and think you're studying anything of value?
Well, they're only studying the third dimension.
Yeah.
Science works on all dimensions.
That's true. And all those other dimensions are influencing this one. And in all the places where they come together, scientists are just flummoxed.
Right. They haven't gotten to the bottom line.
No, nor even understood there is one. No, you're right.
And the bottom line, as you talk about in your books and your blogs, the bottom line is consciousness.
The only thing that exists is an energy-like potentiality without size or form that's alive and highly emotional, and it's part of, our minds are part of that potentiality. That's all that really exists. Everything else is a projection of it.
Right, and if you know quantum physics, we bring that reality into substance.
Yes.
Through our intention of consciousness.
Yes. Max Planck, who got the 1918 Nobel Prize in Physics for discovering, being the father of quantum physics, he's the one who, he came up with the greatest discovery of the 20th century, and he was ignored for it. He said, human consciousness is primary and pre-existing.
Yes.
Primary and pre-existing.
And exists forever. So we can actually go back to the consciousness of 1,000 years ago. It still exists because you talk about it too in your writings about time.
Yeah.
And that you know, we see time as so limited, but we can actually experience time through forever.
Time is not objectively real, and the implications of that fact, and it's a fact, it's an artifact, this level of reality only, and this. You know, if the calculations are right, maybe this is 1/6 of what it is, to the extent that we can talk about percentages. Time doesn't exist, and without time, your mind is eternal by definition.
Right. Actually, I had.
What do you think about it? Isn't that wonderful?
It's wonderful.
Everybody you love is eternal.
Right. And we can comprehend it all in our consciousness. You know, and especially on other dimensions, it's much easier. This is a stupid planet. Humans have limited brain capacity and limited DNA, and so we can't expect a lot of ourselves.
that's actually a profound truth. What we've discovered is our minds are so powerful and so enormous. So there's this sort of clockwork physics that operates only here, and quantum physics seems to be a plug between this physics and the physics that exists in most of reality, which is entirely consciousness-based. But once we leave our bodies and the limiting factor of our brains, there's a tremendous increase in our ability to do stuff. So my next book coming out in August is The Fun of Staying in Touch. And one of the things I talk about is all the ways in which the dead can manipulate our reality that we cannot. they have much more powerful minds than we do.
Oh, yeah. It's so beautiful out there. I always say that, you know, when we die, there actually is a Christian heaven, and there's a Jewish heaven, and there's a Muslim heaven, and there's an atheist heaven, because we've created all those out there. That's on the level of the arrivals and departures, where when we die, we go to the arrivals and departures station, and they make it really nice for us. So they've created realities.
Bob Monroe called those hollow heavens.
Yes.
There is a place which is beautiful and earth-like, which if we are open-minded and we don't have fixed in our mind that we're going to end up on a cloud, which a lot of people think. So therefore, there are a lot of people on the cloud hollow heaven, with or without gates. But the real place where we go, this beautiful summer land, looks like the earth, only perfect and beautiful. And it's full of beautiful beings who once were in bodies just like us, and we're going to be one of them. And I can't wait.
Yes. And actually, I've interviewed a lot of people who have had those experiences or have communicated with people who have those experiences. Because people have had near-death experiences. There are astral travelers who have been on the show. And when we hear about it, it's like, what am I still doing here? Well, we're here for a reason. And we can get into a whole thing about why we do come to such a stupid place. But there is certainly a great deal of soul growth for coming here.
This is a gift. It's very there. I know that with 7 billion or something people, we think it must be easy to get a slot here. It's not. It's a gift.
Yep.
The last thing anyone should ever do is try to accelerate the death process, because there are some very negative consequences for that. Well, this is a gift. We don't throw the gift away. Learn. Grow.
Right. Through that, we develop compassion, wisdom, and a greater light that's needed in the universe. So
we learn to forgive. It turns out love is the core energy. It is extraordinarily, what we call love. I mean, we experience it in a minimal way, but learning to love more perfectly is the reason we're here.
Yes. This is so much fun talking with you.
Me too. I've been loving talking with you.
Good. And people can buy your books. Certainly, you have The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next. And your name is Roberta Grimes, G-R-I-M-E-S, and they can go to your website, robertagrimes.com, and be able to see everything.
And please read my blog, because I put so much effort into it for you. So please read it.
Yeah.
You can subscribe to it. It'll come to you every week. I love hearing from people who have read my blog. It's just so much fun to interact with them and share ideas.
Well, I've read it, and I love your other books, too, about Thomas Jefferson and...
That was the best, the most fun I had. When it was not related to death was researching, coming to understand this extraordinary man and his beautiful marriage. He was married 10 years. He grieved for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And it's a great love story. And it's also, conveniently, it's 1772 to 1782, so it spans the Revolution. We get to understand how the Revolution looked to him. Everything he says in My Thomas is from his writings. Everything except the I Love You, Darling stuff is from his writings. So people can get to know a man who was very private. And I talk in my blog about why he was so private. So, again, I urge people to come read my blog. I work on it so hard.
I'm so happy to help promote your blog.
Thank you.
So, Roberta Grimes, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you so much for being here. I've had so much fun chatting with you. And best of luck with everything you do.
Thank you so much. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.